She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York. Follow her voice, it's straight talk and nice. She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, oh yeah. Don't be surprised if you wanna listen twice. Make decisions, find the right choice. Know yourself better, find your own voice. It's okay if you need help today, cause everybody needs a little push. From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.
Welcome, Transformation Talk Network listeners. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the pushy broad from the Bronx. Welcome to my show, Recovery Recharged, where we share advice and support from experts in addiction and recovery. And this morning, I have the honor of having a wonderful guest with us because we're going to talk about something that is so pertinent for every one of us out there that is struggling in recovery and certainly very familiar to the pushy broad, because I certainly identify with this author and this book. Let me tell you a little something about Leonard Bushell. He is an American publisher, substance abuse counselor, and author of High: Confessions of a Cannabis Addict, which is what we're going to talk about today. And believe me, I can't wait to share with you this book. He is the co-founder of Writers in Treatment, which supports recovery in the arts, and he is the founder of Real Recovery Film Festival, including focusing on stories of addiction and recovery, with over 550 films to their credit. In 2007, Bushell partnered with Robert Downey Sr., co-founded Writers in Treatment, which assists individuals in the writing profession who are suffering from addiction to receive recommendations to reliable treatment facilities. It was a wonderful resource and continues to be. In 2009, he organized the Real Recovery Film Festival, which takes place every year in Los Angeles, Vegas, Denton, Texas, New York City, Vancouver, British Columbia, and I'm sure a plethora of other places. Bushell also created the annual Experience, Strength, and Hope Awards in Los Angeles since 2009. He is the executive producer and publisher of a weekly addiction recovery e-bulletin. And when I introduce him, he's going to tell us where to find that so you can find it yourself. And in 2021, he completed and published his memoir, High: Confessions of a Cannabis Addict, about Bushell's journey from drug dealer to drug counselor. And this memoir also talks about his early life and childhood in Philadelphia. The Pushy Broad from the Bronx and Recovery Recharged is honored today and can't wait for the fun to introduce author and publisher Leonard Bushell. Good morning, Leonard. How are you?
Good morning, Ellen. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much.
All right.
So I want to get into this right away because the most interesting thing to me is that this book is so much fun, and I laughed until I cried, totally laughed until I cried. So I want to talk just a little bit of a background as about how you composed this and why you decided to take a humorous approach to this, because most books that talk about what you talk about are sad, they're serious. So what made you decide to bring this kind of humor to this book?
Well, I think I was maybe born funny. Although, like I said, I'm not a funny person, but I say funny things. And I have to credit the pandemic with actually getting me to finish the book, because I had been keeping notes and writing essays and things for years. And I had them compiled, but they were quite scattered askew in my mind and on my desk. And when the pandemic hit, I realized if I didn't finish it then, I never would.
All right. So you decided that you would put all of these notes together. And of course, we had so much free time during the pandemic. But going back just a second, did you actually see things in this way in your experiences and everything that you've been through? Did you see it as funny, or when you look back on it, it became hysterical? At the time, was it humorous to you?
Yes. Yes, it was. Because I think I read a quote by Henry Miller years ago. He said, if you live life with your heart, it's a tragedy. If you live life with your head, it's a comedy. And so, and I've heard the expression live funny. And since I'm not a musician, who I think are like gods on earth, like if you can't play music for someone, you better be able to make them laugh. Because music and humor sort of, are the most wonderful things in life, I think.
So without a doubt.
The fact that I couldn't play an instrument, I figured I better make people laugh. And certainly to get through high school, either you get beat up, but not if they're laughing at you or with you.
Let's talk about that, all right? You grew up in Philly. Tell us about the neighborhood. You lived in Logan, and you referred to Logan as your Brigadoon. What was that all about? Why?
Because it was like a little ghetto of some kind. On the street where I live, row houses, 50 houses in a row, no one ever moved. No one ever got divorced. You never heard anyone committing suicide. It was like a little village. I had a charge account at the local grocery store. A block this way was the local candy store, where there are always different characters hanging out. Gamblers and small-time thieves, and you could always go there and play the pinball machine, which I think might have been my first activity addiction, because I would steal money to get nickels to play the pinball machine, or I would go along the back alleyway of people's houses and take their bottles and go get the deposit. Remember when you used to get money back for the bottles? And it was something I did because, growing up in the middle of the 20th century was a very special time. I think we straddle the old world and now, the new world, the technological world, the supersonic world. And back then, they still left the milk bottles on the porch in the morning, And what led me to become a news junkie, which is how I was able to start the addiction recovery e-bulletin, because in the morning, you'd go out in the morning and there'd be the Inquirer, the Philadelphia Inquirer, on the porch in the morning paper. And by lunchtime, you'd go to the candy store and get the Daily News, which came out around noon. And then at 4 o'clock, there's boxes of the Philadelphia Bulletin. And so I'd had 3 newspapers a day, and I sort of read them all because I guess it's a form of distraction. It's a form of learning. You get information. And it put me in touch with the world, at a very early age. And I was very grateful that Philadelphia was able to do that. I don't think there are 3 published paper newspapers anymore in Philly, but, I get the New York Times every Sunday. It's the most depressing day of the week. From reading the New York Times from front to back, because it's a lot of unpleasant news, plus some interesting features, to be sure. But I wrote the book to leave my sons a document to explain to them who I really was, what an interesting or satisfying life I had really lived. So when I passed, they know that I did it. I had a good time. I had a good time. Yes, I was high a lot. I was high every day for 26 years. I didn't start drinking professionally until I was in my 30s. But from the first time I had a joint in my mouth, there was a joint in my mouth for 26 years. Never missed a day.
And I understand. I hear you because that's the other thing that attracted me to your book. You talk about the thing that people have a major contention with today, and I'm sure a lot of your clients and my clients talk about, because the name of the book is High: Confessions of a Cannabis Addict. Okay. And there Leonard's looking it up. And there are many people today that would argue with you wrongly, that they can't be addicted to marijuana. Okay. And here you are labeling it black and white. So clear that up for us. Okay. And I want to just one thing that really impressed me. There were a couple of excerpts from your book that impressed me. And I'm just going to paraphrase one because it hits home. And this is the point. From the preface of your book, you say marijuana is often called the lazy man's way to enlightenment. It can also be called a lazy man's way to creativity. And it is, until it's not. That's what you say. And if you think there can be a heaven on earth with a joint in your mouth, then it must be very good weed. No, that's not BS. Drugs wear off. Reality never does. My son often reminds me of what Timothy O'Leary said. The goal is not to get high, but to be high. Can you address that, please, and what we're talking about here and how you can be addicted to pot? Give us your views.
First, I want to say I didn't know Timothy Leary was that Irish. but he did say that. And I think, so as you said, people could argue that pot isn't addictive, but they'd be wrong. But yet people still want to argue it. And that's on them. It's a great drug from time to time or at a certain age. I primarily wrote the book partially to help people who've been smoking pot for 25 or 30 years, who think they're doing it to still get high, but they're doing it because it's a habit, because it's addictive. And they're not really getting high anymore. They're just not getting sick from the lack of THC in their bloodstream, which you need to maintain a certain level to just feel normal. Begrudge people who smoke once a week to go to a concert or to a movie or to make love. But it's the people, you know, the shake, the wake and bake every day. I used to take my son to school at 7:30 in the morning. And on the way home, there was always a roach in the ashtray. So that's the way I started my day. Took the kid to school, had the roach in the car. And there was always something there. 26 years getting high every day.
Yes, you said from 18 to 44, and you decided, and it's not only all of your escapades in growing up in the 50s. I know that you dealt with a very difficult childhood. You lost your father at birth, and was it a car accident back in 1950? Yes, no.
He died in a car on his way home from the night shift at the post office.
Ah, okay.
He died at birth. I was thinking usually it's the mother who dies, but in this case,
no. But you were just born 3 weeks ago, right?
Three weeks. So my mother, I already had a son who was already 3 years old. Now she has a newborn, and now her husband is gone. You know, so I'm told that she went into shock. Into grief, shock. There were no groups back then. It was, and she stopped breastfeeding. So I got cut off like at a very early age. And I think maybe, you know, since then I was chasing that first hit. And it was very, you know, when your father, never had a father. So I don't know what I'm missing. In fact, I've been talking with my therapist lately, thinking I'm starting to feel like I really missed something in this human life of having two parents who, and I think there's something in the book about how I feel like I grew up like a plug with only one prong. Mm-hmm. So all the information I got was from my mother, who was a great woman, who was a great mother, but all my information, all my teachings came from my mother, and I never had a father to challenge me. You know, my mother never had a catch with me. Lucky I had an older brother who could somehow fill in for, a bit of a role model.
Right. And that brother, Bruce, yes.
Bruce
was only Bruce Broussel, who was only 3 years older than you, did what he could. But you spent a lot of time in early addiction, you talked about, doing some gambling and hanging out at a quarter candy store, right, named Cooper's. So you had a lot of guys there that took you in and taught you ways.
Were my surrogate fathers, yes. And I did start gambling at an early age just to be part of the crowd. And then gambling can become addictive. And gambling is not about winning. It's about heightened emotions. You can become addicted to losing, too. You think it's like, I want to win. I just want to be what they call in action, you know, out of myself, in action. I've always said there's, you know, the most zen-like thing you can do is bet $100 on a horse at a racetrack. And from the moment the horse leaves the gate, you're not thinking of mortality, of sex, of your chores, or your responsibilities. You're watching the colors on the jockey's jersey, you know, for the minute and a half, whatever it takes, however long the race is. But getting back to the addictiveness of marijuana, when I was 20 years old, I was in college. True, it was a community college in Philadelphia, because you either went to Temple, Penn State. I never could get into Penn. I didn't have the IQ to get into Penn. Or you got into Philadelphia Community College. And at the beginning of my first year, I was addicted to hashish. Hopefully everybody remembers what incredible drug hashish was. And we couldn't find any. Me and my friend Joe Brodsky, we couldn't find any. And I couldn't live without it. And I realized we were smoking red Lebanese hash. And I looked on a map, and Lebanon is right north of Israel. And I thought, well, it must be some camels, some mules coming over the border bringing. So I dropped out of college and went to Israel to get my stash. You know, at the time it was a 12-hour plane flight from Kennedy. And I never even entertained the option, the option of not getting high or smoking marijuana even. I needed hashish because it was very strong. And I went to Israel with a friend and smuggled back a pound and a half of hashish. Our family thought we were going to discover our roots, Israel. You know. Our friends thought we were going to make money. We were really just going to buy our stash. In AA, it's called going to any lengths.
Exactly. Well, and that's exactly what you talk about in the book, that entire Israeli escapade and what happens and how terrifying it is and how funny you make it. So that is certainly something that people will want to look at. That entire, it was an innocent I spy espionage escapade that really could have landed you in very big trouble, and the person that you were with as well. So that's something that somebody really has to catch in the book.
I love that expression, nervous laughter.
Yes. But I know what it's like, especially back then. I mean, it was that time that Leonardo DiCaprio described in Catch Me If You Can, that very amazing, where air travel was luxurious, where the whole idea of traveling all over was an amazing thing, and nobody looked as well as they look now. You know, none of this stuff was really being looked at, but it was still a very, very scary thing. And I know how it was for me when I was doing things, not to your extent, but yeah. We took lots of chances, didn't we? Lots of big chances.
Oh, no. Yes.
I know. And I know you started.
Was it risky behavior or was it courageous? Yeah.
I like to think it's a little bit of both. Lots of guts and no brains.
Right. Well, no regard for any potential consequences.
Exactly. No matter what.
Denial.
Exactly. And that's what it actually says in the American Society of Addiction Medicine. It says that when we are going after that, like you decided to go, you know, so many miles for hash in Israel, you had no thought to anything else, no morals, no ethics, nothing. And that's what happens when we're in the throes of addiction. And for you, you started early, but I want you to be able to relate, because when you decided to get high and when you also decided that your first profession should be a drug dealer, tell us how old you were and that story about that involves Cy Schultz. Will you tell us briefly that story?
Well, I think I was in my senior year of high school. And for a time, it seemed like I was only going to sell pot and football pools because school was boring. And it gave me something to do, the drug dealing. I liked having appointments and meetings and the you know, I carried my first, you know, half pound of marijuana in my in those little velvet bags that you carry your bar mitzvah yarmulke and your tallis in, and it felt very religious, spiritual to me. And someone asked, well, at first I was getting high on my own. And then someone said, hey, do you have any extra? And I said, no, but I'll get some. And the first time, this, and so it just, it happened naturally. It was like, maybe I was a born businessman. Or it just happened, and I was doing someone a favor. You know, you do get on good people's good sides when you give them something that makes them happy temporarily, but it does make them happy at the time. And it was just something, and I liked having money in my pocket. I liked being able to, like I said, play the pinball machine, go to the racetrack, gamble. Go to films, go to Broadway musicals if I needed to go, which I did need to go a lot, as it states in the book.
So you decided, I know your love of cinema, your love of movies, because that's also how you passed your time. You had a lot of extra time. You were a latchkey kid because mom was working, supporting two young boys, of course. And then you decided that if you could buy drugs for someone else and make a buck on it, like, wow, this was a major revelation. Let me do something and let me start to deal. And that's what you did for a very long time. So I want to bring it now because
I did it for 23 years.
You did it for 23 years.
Is that a long time?
Yeah, a drop in the bucket for us, right? A drop in the bucket. All right. So I want to bring it here because we're at a point that I want everybody to understand that the story is magnificent. It is funny. You will laugh until you cry. It is called High Confections. Confessions of a Cannabis Addict, Leonard Bushell. So hold up the book. You can find it on Amazon. But let's talk a little bit about what you want people to know. What's the main message and takeaway that you want readers to gain from this book? What do you want them to know?
You know, I just want to say one other thing about, you know, about why I wrote the book. It was for my sons to leave something to them. But I had also heard that, you know, quote, an unexamined life is not worth living. And I changed it to an undocumented life only exists in the ether. And so I have a habit right now for the last 25 years since I got sober, every night I'll write in my night journal where I went, what I did, what movie I saw, what show I saw, just to be able to look back and say, yes, I actually lived. Because otherwise it's just, you know, it's very experiential. But since I'm not making paintings or even a wall, I'm not creating sculpture, I'm not writing music, how do I even know that I lived? So I write it down every night. And that's partially, you know, why I wrote the book, just to say, oh, look, I had this life. And if I can write a memoir or autobiography, anybody can. It just takes, you know, a little chutzpah or a little patience. And it's the same with getting sober. I got high every day for 26 years. And the gift of sobriety out, it's the ultimate culmination of the hero's journey. Go out and do all those wild and crazy things. And then you stop, and then what you're confronted with is, like you said earlier, you can't come down from reality, which is like performing tightrope walk without a net. So you stay very alert You stay alert when you're a drug dealer because you're always afraid of being arrested. But when you're not high on anything and you don't have, and I want to just quote something that our lovely James Baldwin said. He said, "Nothing is more desirable than to be released from an affliction, but nothing is more frightening than to be divested of a crutch." So you got to have kahunas to get and stay sober. You know, it's an exhilarating experience. It's frightening, but that's what makes it exhilarating. You know, and it's like someone said, "Well, I needed to take the edge off." I'm thinking, the edge is where I want to be. You know, the edge is where it's exciting, and the edge is where you're awake. The edge is where you need to stay balanced. And I like the edge. And the other thing I would like to put Alan Watts, who I met when I was 18, miraculously, in Philadelphia. He was speaking, and somehow I was there. And he said, he was talking about LSD, but I'm talking
okay.
about everything. He said,
"Well, one last word from him because it's time for us to go.
When you get the message, hang up the phone."
This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening. And remember, everybody needs a little push.
From the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, New York.